One, two, three.
Things.
Ever since I started taking Uber, I've been really curious about how does it work, why does it work, and really it just seemed, in some ways it seemed like this utopian dream, and in other ways it seemed like this dystopian nightmare all at once. This issue, this sort of like app-driven company, but it's like, oh, it's so exciting, you just get in your car and drive and you make money. But it's also like, yeah, but there's got to be some evil in the center of that hole. So I started talking to Uber drivers, and recently I talked to this cabbie about it, and for like a half hour he was driving me home from the bar at like 3 a.m, and he went through the whole thing with me, and it was pretty intense. So today I wanted to talk about cabbies versus Uber, and generally this app driven world we live in. Smartphones, self-driving cars. The life of the regular Joe in the world of the automated trafficking.
Right. That seems like a big, big, broad topic. I think talking about the Uber, let's start with that and then
Goes. Yeah, well, so the thing with Uber that I found, that I always was, the thing that started really bothering me about Uber was Uber Pool. It's like we'd pay $4. We get in the car. We don't tip them. You don't tip this guy. You sit in the car. Sometimes you just sit there in total silence, and there's like five people in the car. You're all sitting there in silence, all rigid. But sometimes it would just be me and my wife, and we get a car like all that was cost less than to take the T, and we get all the way out to like some outlet outside of Boston. And I'm like, this guy is not making any money at this. Why? It's like it's intentional. It's like it's slaving for us. He's like a slave. And I'd be like, why?
Explain pool. I don't take Uber. I don't use my smartphone for anything smart. So I'm curious, what is Uber Pool? I mean, I know generally what Uber is, but what is Uber Pool?
Uber Pool is where you basically, it's like a carpool. So So you get an Uber and somebody else might, and maybe it'll just be you in the car, but maybe it'll be three other people and you'll have to wait 45 minutes before you know, they'll take that person, then this person, this person, then you. And when I talk to the Uber drivers themselves, they're always like, yeah, Uber Pool, we make no money, but they make us to do it. You know, it used to be Uber was like this exciting thing for a lot of people who wanted to make some quick cash. You know, you just sign on when you want and sign off when you want to be done. But a lot of the drivers I've talked to in the last few months have basically been like, they're making less and less money every night. And the added issue is the car, because your car has to be in relatively good condition, and you just really work through those cars. There's other issues too that the cabbie I talked to brought up, like they don't have commercial insurance. And there's this whole big thing about like, if you get in a car accident in an Uber, you know, how does that work? You know, these people just have like, they're just regular people who are driving their regular cars. So it's very gray area-ish. That's what the thing about Uber, I always felt like it's this amorphous gray area. It's sort of like the Cayman Islands as an industry or you know, like one of those, like, it feels like it shouldn't exist. Like it's like someone's cheating somebody somehow to get this to end. And that's it. I don't know why it really bothers me so much. I'm like, people are being cheated, and we're all just being like, oh, it's a cheap ride, ha ha. Like, somebody somewhere is getting shafted.
But Gabe, so I don't use Uber either, but isn't it the case that the driver can choose not to pick you up? I mean, if they see that they're going to get paid $2 to drive 30 miles, can't they just be like, yeah?
So I'll skip that. I think what the drivers were saying is basically, if you opt out of Uber Pool, then you just sort of like you kind of get kicked off of the app altogether or something like that. Like you have to take a certain number of Uber Pool fares to continue to get Uber X fares.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, so they have to take these because they don't make money off it, but Uber is good for Uber. You know, it looks, because that's why people want it. I mean, everybody wants to just do Uber Pool now. It's like the cheap way to get around. You know, and you're like, oh, it's cheaper than taking the subway, and I get a car. And it's like, yeah, well, if something sounds too good to be true, it probably is. Maybe it's okay for us, but I mean, there's something. Somebody's getting cheated.
Seems we're always doing something to hurt each other. But you know, you never really hurt me.
until the fourth verse of this song. Blue eyes looking through an old gray curtain somebody forgot to pull down. Spiderweb memories hiding for certain the lonely faces of clowns. Running on beaches surrounded by leeches, you never see children at play. If there's no tomorrow for us, then I'll live yesterday's.
Yeah, I've only had a few experiences with Uber. My only like concern about it up until this whole Trump thing was the fact that they weren't really vetted, or there was no like, it doesn't seem like there's any sort of regulations. Like we had a driver, a friend of mine called an Uber one time, and the driver was clearly really tired. And, there was a couple moments where I was really sort of fearing for my life. He was sort of swerving, He swerved to miss this sort of big cement divider in the middle of the road, and which was like clearly there. Like, I don't know how he missed it. So, you know, there's that. That was, and all the stuff I'd heard about women getting, assaulted and stuff, but
yeah, well, that's what the cabbie kept talking about. He kept talking about, you know, for my medallion, you know, I had to put down the small fortune to get my medallion and be vetted, you know, or whatever the word is. He's like, these guys are just getting a car and that's it. You know, it's like, there's no regulation at all, you know? And that's the thing. It's like the app is like somewhere out in some amorphous region, and it's just people in a car being like, do, I need to make some extra money, you know? Like the guy who burns Korans in Florida, turns out, drives for Uber. Just found out, you know, it's like, it's just everybody drives for Uber. Everybody and their cousin is driving for Uber. Even if you just have a tricycle, you're driving for Uber, you know?
I generally like the whole concept, though. I feel like, you know, the problem with cabs all along was that they were too expensive and really like not an affordable way to get around. I like the idea of it somehow, you know, if it can work out that people are getting paid a living wage, like it would be great if it worked out. It'd be this utopian, like you were saying, great. I remember like the situationists talk about that, like cabs being the ultimate way of getting around.
Yeah.
You know, they talked about that in the, whenever that was, the 50s, 60s?
60s, man, 60s.
So, yeah, I think it could be great. I just think that the guy who runs that company seems like a real douche, and I don't know.
Do you think there's a market for like a old timey hipster cab company where a guy in like a handlebar mustache with like an old CB radio and a kind of ancient car from the 40s or 50s picks you up? And you have to flag them down. Like there's no other way to contact them.
It would be Buster Poindexter from Scrooged, the big yellow cab.
I think that will happen in the future. Like I do think there's probably the thing is that this is naturally going to evolve into self-driving cars, right?
Yeah,
Uber's already have self-driving cars in Pittsburgh, and then there's the Google cars in Mountain View. And in some ways that does seem like a utopia, but I really feel like, okay, so I went to Mountain View recently, and my feeling in Mountain View was I felt like I was in that show, that British show, The Prisoner, you know, and that's kind of what I feel like when I imagine this world of self-driving cars. I mean, it's like, so now the people are being shafted, but in the future it'll be like total lockdown of all freedom of movement.
You mean, 'cause everything will be like a robot will have to pick you up? And all of your limbs will be withered and atrophied until the robot comes, collects you.
it'll just blow air into your atrophied limbs. It'll be like a bike pump. You'll like pump yourself up before you get out and go in the car.
Yes, that's correct.
Was love the stranger that stood in the doorway and begged us to come in? Hungry and eager, we ran to the keyhole and listened for voices of friends. Be people were lying and people were crying. We never heard children at play. If there's no tomorrow for us, then I'll live yesterday's.
I don't know why I have so much anxiety around transportation, but it
sounds like you're taking Uber a lot, which sort of surprises me. I mean,
well, it's the wife, you know, she has the smartphone and it's like, let's get an Uber. Bink. We're in the Uber. And there are sometimes magical Uber moments. There are sometimes magical Uber moments, but
what are the magical, like you meet someone who's interesting or you just,
yeah. So someone will be like, oh, we're just here for the furry convention from Texas. You know, I don't know.
Oh, this is the pool.
The other people you're pooling with. I see.
Yeah. Okay. In the pool. The driver, but I mean, you know, drivers are always interesting, whether it's a cabbie or an Uber, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think they should come out with Uber pool, but it should be an actual pool. Like it should be a car with a huge, yeah, like rolling swimming pool on the back. People can just hop in, at least in the summers.
Yeah.
That pool would be filled with piss.
And other juices.
Yeah, they could call the car company Jacuzzi, but it would be like ooze. maybe it wouldn't even be water. Maybe it could be like some like semi-solid goo. Like it could be like, I don't know, something like pudding. Okay.
Yeah. But what's the whole deal with, I mean, people are like boycotting Uber now, right? They're all switching to Lyft, right?
Right. So then, and this also gets to this issue of the app driven company, because people are just using it and it's like, okay, so all the cabbies boycotted and then went on strike because of the protests around the Muslim ban and Uber just filled that gap. But it's like, I don't think that was a conscious decision. I just think that there's like, it's just a machine and nobody was driving them and no one's thinking. It's like, it's just regular people. It's like, well, I don't drive. I don't care, you know? Right. And so it's sort of like, so it gets,
it's weird. It's like,
up.
It's weird because it's not really, it is a company, but it's not really a company. It's a device for people to create their own income, based on the rules of this system. But it's still like generally kind of autonomous in terms of the people working for them. They're not like controlled by Uber in any way.
Well, they kind of are, because I think the way you get, that's the thing, because the person who's taking the ride pays through Uber, you have to sign up as a driver to get paid. So
right.
If it was sort of like a more egalitarian thing, it would just be like, that would enable someone to get in touch with you for a drive, but then they would pay you directly. But that's not how it works. And so they do end up having this weird, Uber has this weird control over its drivers because they do get paid from Uber.
Right.
But their interaction with the driver is just through this like machine, right? They just like...
Yeah. No, it's very disconnected. I mean, you're right. It's something that sort of seems to be the wave of the future in a lot of ways. But
right. And that form of employment as well is part of the thing that bothers me about Uber, is the way that you're employed. You're not like, you don't have a boss. You just have a machine that's a boss. And the machine, yeah. and it's sort of like, and if there's a problem, it's like, oh, well, it's the problem is with the machine. There's no, you're just, I mean, it's just totally, it's scary to me. It's like just people become
slaves
to a machine.
My machine boss is a dick.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is weird.
Right on the wing of a sterile cowboy, indifferent is what you will be. Lie on the floor and let four hands touch you, and two of the hands will be me. No one is coming, yet someone is coming. Oh, could it be children to play? If there's no tomorrow for us, then I'll live yesterday's.
So that's my two cents on the matter. And I have to say, when that half hour I was in a cab, I hadn't taken a cab in a long time, because it's just so much cheaper. And it was nice to have this. Well, we bonded over how terrible Uber was, but it was like,
that was, you know, probably the only that cabbie's only fare in like 3 days. He'd been polishing his cab for you. And
he was like, telling me, right. He was like, you know, I spent a small fortune getting my medallion. You know, he kept saying like, you know, and now he can't make any money. He's like, he's going on about all the regulations, you know, like how if he drops me off and he can only pick people up in Somerville, he's only licensed to pick up in Somerville. So he drops me off at Brookline. He has to drive all the way back to Somerville before he can get somebody else. And it's just like, in some ways I think, oh, this seems so archaic, all this rules and regulations. But on the other hand, it's like, and it also gets back to that whole issue, another big issue of over-regulation versus libertarian, you know, free-for-all. Like, that to me is also embedded in this issue of cabbies versus, and it's like, oh yeah, it's like the Uber in some ways makes so much more sense, but it also leads to, like, I mean, it just feels like there's so much more openness for exploitation. I don't know. This is, I feel like Uber is a perfect symbol of the world we live in now.
Yeah, and for sure. Uber and also like Airbnb is also part of that thing. And there's a lot of companies that they're interesting and kind of brilliant in ways, but they do leave themselves open for some scary shit.
Yeah, Airbnb is another one. I went to I used Airbnb last summer to travel, and you know, we had a fine interaction with our hosts, but I thought, these people are just opening their home to somebody, just any some random person
like you,
like me. Yeah, but I mean, it's weird. It's like I don't know, it's just I understand, like, you know, it seems it's like it's skirting around the edge of what's acceptable. It's like this exciting taboo existence. But
I mean, the interesting thing about both Airbnb and Uber that I still don't really understand is kind of what you said, both in the hotel industry and in the cab industry, there were always these extreme regulations, which kind of leveled the playing field. Like, everybody, you know, you had your area, like Somerville or Boston or whatever, and if that was your area, you could only pick up people from there, and all the other things, fees, right, you know, blah blah blah. And the same in hotels. I mean, there are all these crazy regulations around hotels, and now with things like Uber and Airbnb and things like that, it's strange because it seems like somehow if you're kind of running a business using those services, none of those regulations apply. And I don't know how they skirted any of that, because that seems to be the reason that cabbies are pissed and hotels are annoyed. And I think these services are really great, so I'm not blasting the services. I just don't understand how they managed when they came into town to dodge the regulations that everybody seemed not to be able to.
Yeah, I think it's liability. I think it's that there's these companies, like a cab company or a hotel, they take a lot, you know, they're liable for like anything that happens to you. And Uber, and I think some of the way that they're skirting around that is confusing. Like, I don't know how the people are, like, if something happened to you at someone's house, is like, say their ceiling fell in, are the people responsible? Like, can you sue the Uber or sue Airbnb or sue the people's hot people who rented you the house? Like, how does it work?
So again, when I was talking to this cabbie, what he was basically saying is, first of all, the thing about these companies is they never came into town. So they're not, they're like outside of town. That's why it's like the Cayman Islands or something like that. It's like they live outside of this universe that the regulations are occurring in. They're not in the physical space. The people who are Airbnb or who are the Uber drivers, they're in the physical space. And basically, if something doesn't happen, they're like, well, nothing's happened so far. But the point is, that's what the cabbie was saying, is they don't have commercial insurance. So if you get in a car accident, what will happen is their regular insurance will just drop them, because it's like, well, we wouldn't authorize you to pick up people, and you don't get anything. And that's basically what they're saying, is like, there's no one is liable.
Huh. So if you wanted to become a more legitimate Uber driver, you'd buy commercial insurance or something.
Right. But no one does that because they can't, don't make enough of a profit for that to make sense.
Right. Huh.
We'll be right back.
I also wanted to talk a little bit about technology, less scary side of technology. I live in Chicago, and we do not have cable. We have, you know, some streaming, like a Roku box and stuff. But I feel like most of the time I'm just watching antenna TV, which is now digital antenna television. Do you guys have this in your homes?
Yeah, we have. Malcolm, you and I have exactly the same. What you just described, Roku plus antenna is what I've got.
I don't watch television.
Well, I'll educate you, Gabe.
Okay.
So it's this box, and it projects light out of it. And
a lot like a computer.
Yes. So the thing I noticed most with the I guess it was about 2 years ago that I got this digital television, 2 or 3 years ago, and digital antenna. And there's hundreds and hundreds of stations that you can get in a big city like Chicago. I'm sure in Boston too. You know, it's got the normal network TVs, TV channels, and then some of those like WB and other sort of smaller networks. And then it has like hundreds of really bizarre niche channels that I'm very like interested in for some reason. Like, I don't know, there's like Indian channels, there's a lot of foreign stuff like that, but there's a channel called MeTV, which is probably in Boston too.
Yeah.
Which, you know, it shows reruns of, you know, whatever, Three's Company and 70s TV shows. MASH is on like 5 times a day. Which is fine by me. I love MASH. And then there's this new like game show channel called Buzzer.
Oh yeah, we have just, that.
Which is kind of my new favorite, which just plays old game shows from the 70s and 80s that I don't remember at all, but are amazing. There's a channel that just called like Tough TV that shows sort of westerns and more like kind of macho 70s movies. There's so many channels. Anyway, I just sort of thought it'd be fun to talk about TV.
I remember the trend way before digital TV, the transition between, I don't know, when we were much younger and when infomercials became popular. And I remember, you know, as a kid, all of the reruns that you're talking about now were just on regular TV. And so, you know, I definitely was too young to say catch a lot of those shows, not all of them, but a lot of them in their sort of first run. But I saw all of them in rerun, as I'm sure we all did. And then at some point they were all replaced by horrible, horrible infomercials. And I was so angry that they were that they were gone. And I was like, how have these been taken from me? My world would be completely, totally complete if these were back on the air. And now they all are, but I'm sort of overwhelmed by it. When I turn them on, I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, now I don't have, I know exactly what you're saying. Because now, like before, I had that free time to like just sit at like 3 in the morning and just be like watching stupid TV. But there was nothing really great on. Now, if I had that free time, I could be watching like Barnaby Jones. I could be watching endless episodes of Press Your Luck.
Kojak.
Kojak. Yeah, there's like, and that's the other weird thing is these shows were old when we were young and they're still showing them.
I know.
It doesn't make any sense. It's like, I feel like anyone who like remembers those shows being on are dead, you know?
Yeah, well,
and all those, sorry to say, but all the actors are now dead. Like, none of those people are around anymore. They seem so alive in the show, so I have to say.
Well, I used to take care of this guy. He was like 90 years old, and he had to watch Hawaii Five-0. It was on Me. What's it called? Me TV.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he had to watch Hawaii Five-0 every day. I really grew fond of that show. The original. I know there's a new Hawaii Five-0, but the original Hawaii Five-0. I don't know. I was into it.
It's like late 60s, right? It's not 70s. It's still like pretty tame. It's not like.
There's some early 70s. I don't remember its run, but yeah.
I remember there would be like the hippies. There was some stuff with the hippies. He's like, and it's always so preachy. It's like, and he was always saying, brudda. You know what I mean, brudda? He always said, brudda. I don't know why, but I guess that's like island talk, I guess.
Yeah, Magnum PI is on a lot.
Oh, man.
They're all great. Yeah, I feel like, I don't know, I'm looking forward to retirement and being in a retirement home and watching these channels.
But aren't you starting to lose your mind? I mean, now when I turn it on and there's the Andy Griffith Show, which there is
the
time.
Those are terrible.
Star Trek, I think, and I'm no expert on old TV, but I think Star Trek actually ran for 2 seasons. Two. So there aren't that many episodes. And they've been playing for 50 years now. And even though sometimes like, ooh, Star Trek, I'll watch it. I'm like, wow, if I'm in the retirement home chained to a plastic chair watching the 2 episodes of the original Star Trek round and round and round.
Well, no, when you're retired, they're going to be playing like reruns of the infomercials that you had to watch.
You know what it'll be? It'll be like the YouTube channel. It'll just be YouTube videos. Like all those videos that Adam was showing. It'll just be like the guy in the woods, like making the fire or eating the MREs. We'll be like, oh yeah, that was some good video.
That was some good eating.
The other
thing that's strange to me about this is, I mean, I suppose there are a fair number of people that just have over-the-air TV, but how can these million small TV companies be making any money?
Yeah, that's like, what I want to know too.
Piping out, you know, Magnum PI at this point. Like how much?
They're just not paying. I don't think they pay anything for these programs. I think they're really cheap. I think in their advertisers, I was watching and there was like advertisements for local chain stores and stuff that I can't imagine they paid that much money to get those ad
spots.
To be
on there, yeah.
So I don't know. Yeah, it's strange.
Is it all like bundled together? It's like one company that's putting out all of them?
No, it's multiple companies. Like that's the thing. I wonder how much it costs to buy digital bandwidth like that. I imagine it's cheap because there's like channels that of like Indian videos, like Bollywood videos that are like, they look like they're taped off someone's bad, like VHS recording. Like
Malcolm, really, you realize what we need to do, don't you?
What's that?
We need to start a TV set. Yeah, we need to start a TV network.
And a TV
I mean,
set.
If it's, we it's need really to start a TV that. Set.
Yeah, maybe you need to get a TV set first.
I'm really excited. I mean, I believe in that.
Yeah,
let's do it. Let's do it.
If we ever show on there.
I've been doing these shows. I mean, like I just put up a video of a woman, you know, doing this performance with like splattering blood on a wall. That could go on there.
Yeah,
you know?
Actually, that is the one thing that's not that I don't see a lot of is sort of. What's it called? You know how cable, like community access.
Oh, yeah, community
cable.
Access.
I don't.
Yeah, yeah.
I haven't seen much over the air, like wacky local Gabe on, you know, his own community access feed doing, you know,
that's right,
Gabe things.
Gabe TV. Come on, come on! I want it! I want it! I want it! I want it!
I'll pay for it.
All right.
If you can figure it out,
I'll look into it.
All right, guys, it's a deal.
I think it should be, what was that movie, is it Videodrome? The one where they were pulling in weird broadcasts, you know, that were, you know, hypnosis broadcasts or something. Remember that
movie?
But
it was like a torture channel.
No,
I
know.
Don't have a torture
I'm not
channel.
Saying you have to have that channel, but I like the idea of on this digital TV having like random, like pirate, you know, pirate digital TV where it's like, where is it? I saw this weird guy, you know, and it would be you, of course. Doing whatnot, and then you can't find it for a couple of weeks, and then there you are again. You know, running around your apartment spouting off nonsense, and then you're gone. You know, things like that.
It would always be broadcast from Gabe's closet.
Yeah.
It would just be mostly just be him reading his book, his own books.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know what's weird is, like, I don't see, like, it's coming up on probably 20 years since the first sort of reality television started, right? Like Survivor or whatever those shows were. But you don't see reruns of reality television.
No.
Like, I imagine that people are going to be watching reruns of Matlock and whatever till the end of time, because there's just so much bad television on that no one wants to watch it again.
There is a channel locally, one of these sorts of channels, that plays horrible TV from the late 80s and early 90s that just doesn't hold up at all. Things like Night Court. And,
oh, I know that channel. Yes,
and,
I know that channel.
And I think it's called Laugh, and they play like Night Court and Roseanne. And Roseanne's not, I suppose, that bad, but there, I don't even know the names of these shows, but you turn it on and in 2 minutes.
Family Ties.
It's really hard. That era just doesn't hold up at all.
There's a show that Ellen DeGeneres was in before she was, I think it's called, like, it might just be called Ellen or Ellen DeGeneres. I don't know what it's called, but it's fucking terrible. It's like the worst laugh track ever. You know, it's like these really, really lame flat jokes followed by this uproarious laughter.
Yeah.
It's really, really awful.
So, or there should be like a show that's like remixed. It just like mixes together different shows in like this crazy way forever. It just goes on forever. It's just constantly.
Has random characters from other shows show up into
like
the first
spliced,
show.
It just splices together all this footage totally crazily.
Would it be awesome if it just took one show, like say Roseanne, and instead of like it being a linear story, it was just clips from different episodes that didn't really go together.
And so
it would take a while before you figured out, hey, wait, this is multiple shows. This is not one episode. And it would just be endless. It would go on all day long.
Right. It would never stop. It would just be forever.
All right.
That would be the torture channel. That would be Videodrome. You're like, oh God, remix.
All right. I guess that's all I really needed to talk about.
All right. Well, now it's on me. So,
yeah.
So here, this one's completely bizarre, but essentially the high level thing is I want to talk about the atomic creatures of Chernobyl and this theory I have about evolution, which ties back to a piece I saw George Carlin do at one point where he was just ranting as he does about, you know, all of our, you know, fears and concerns and saying that it's just, you know, we're just eventually going to be consumed by the earth. And then he goes on to say that maybe what we were here for is just to make plastic because the earth couldn't make it itself. And now we've made plastic and now we can just be reabsorbed now that the earth has plastic. So the point here is that since the Chernobyl disaster, you know, there's been this huge exclusion zone where people can't live. And there are occasional stories, I saw one recently, which made me think of this, where because there are no human predators, the animal population has just gone crazy there. It's like the old forests that, you know, you'd read about in some crazy grim fairy tale. It's just like filled with, like, you know, wolves and lions and just crazy creatures. And there are all these, occasionally people go in and put photo traps where they capture them. So there are all these eerie pictures of all the different creatures. And the last part of this is it just occurred to me at one point that, you know, they must have like evolved, or they must be evolving to be completely protected from like radiation, because it's like such a high radiation environment there. So I figure maybe what's going to happen over time is that humans are going to just continue to F up, like Fukushima and Chernobyl and whatever other things. And there's going to be like all this highly radioactive area where we can't go. And then these other mutant creatures are going to evolve there and become completely impervious to radiation. And then it will be the future. Gabe.
That's a good theory. That's a good theory. Are they like the animals studied? Like, do they contain radiation? Are they coming out deformed and stuff?
There have been a lot of studies. I did some reading on this, and it's somewhat inconclusive about whether they're actually evolving to be what the actual technical term is, radio resistance. And in fact, it turns out that even humans, if you fire, at least this is what I read on Wikipedia, so it could be a lie, but if you sort of like get occasionally exposed to low doses of radiation, your body can develop, like there are already mechanisms that we've evolved that develop like radio resistance so that we're not harmed by it over time. And the question is, are these creatures, do they have sort of, are they evolving these super powerful radio resistance where they just can kind of deal with it? And that's sort of, the jury's out whether evolution is actually doing that. But they're not, the pictures I've seen, they're not like horribly deformed with three heads. There is some of that I've read about where they'll have like weird, you know, generally you'll find creatures like Simpson style, like two-headed fish. But there's a lot of just normal looking creatures that are completely breeding like crazy out in the radioactive wasteland.
Dark is the canyon when life is beginning, and secrets are easy to keep. Soft is the baby that's resting inside you, so take it please while it's asleep. Knives that have cut you when others have touched you have taken our children away. If there's no tomorrow for us, then I'll live yesterday's.
I didn't realize that area is still quarantined. Like, is it ever going to be habitable?
No. I mean, So there are two things. One is they just actually, I didn't find this for when I was looking into the radioactive creatures, but I know that only a month or two ago, they finished putting like the permanent structure over that nuclear power plant because it was completely unprotected. And if it ever had another like uncontrolled nuclear meltdown, it would have just blasted crap right back up into the atmosphere. So they built this insane structure over the whole thing that's supposed to last for, you know, 1,000 years or something. But the half-life of some of the things that were released is, I don't know, thousands and thousands, if not tens of thousands of years. But I mean, people go in there a fair amount. I don't know how, I mean, you know, the exclusion zone is pretty big, and I think they don't want people to sort of live there permanently, but you can go there and be fine. You know, you can wander around, and if you spent a day or two there, you'd be fine.
I saw some photographs of people going to the Fukushima areas that are totally deserted, and it's very eerie. They're sort of like tourists, you know, they like put on some gas mask and they go in and they're like walking around the town and be like, hey, look at this convenient mart that just was left all of a sudden, and I'm going to hold up this noodle packet, ha ha ha, you know, like that, just walking around.
That is like a weird brand of tourism.
Yeah.
Nuclear.
Yeah, before they put that crazy thing over the power plant, people would actually take tours up to its base, and some people, I just saw some video at some point, would go in. I don't know if that was, you were supposed to, but I mean, there were still people in that thing, you know, kind of running it, or at least keeping it from getting worse for quite some time. But yeah, I guess I just wonder if some of these things that especially things that are created by us, you know, like nuclear radiation issues or whatever, if they're concerns now because the I mean, again, I'm not for spreading any of that stuff, but they're essentially concerns because our current, like the current organisms haven't had to deal with it so much. So we're, so they really can't, but that if it was actually sort of more pervasive, that there'd be this super being of creatures.
Well, I mean, I don't know if you'd be a super being. Wouldn't it be just that they could deal with radiation? That would be it, right? It's not like they're like,
yeah, you couldn't fly put on a cape and fly around or anything.
You could just walk around in Chernobyl. That's your superpower. I mean, is that really a superpower?
Yeah, that's kind of a lame superhero. It's like the one time that someone launches an atomic bomb around you, you can like survive. That's the only time your superpower.
Yeah, but then
does
like
you any good.
On the 4th of July and stuff, instead of normal firecrackers, you could have like little nuclear explosives. Fire them off and you'd be totally fine.
And everyone else would die.
Well, no, everybody would. All the kids would have this.
Yeah, it would be quite a firework to watch that light just like eradicate the entire city. Be like, wow, that would make our 4th of July seem like I don't know, the 4th of July of the ancient Aztecs or something. Although the ancient Aztecs probably had a pretty awesome 4th of July, a lot of blood sacrifice.
Love is the night that has taken you from me, and strangers are stealing my sleep. Cigarette mountains and fantasy fountains, and I lay me down to weep. But something inside me cannot be denied me. There must be some children to play. If there's no tomorrow for us, then I'll live yesterday's.
No, it's pretty crazy. All those areas, I mean, I'm sort of fascinated by I don't know, you know, things that are abandoned and all that kind of stuff. There's something about all those places, but it is horrifying that we've actually managed, be it Fukushima or Chernobyl, to create places where even like large governments are like, yeah, you can't go there, or you can't spend much time there, or whatever. You know, those are just places on Earth that are no longer livable. Seems like we can't make that mistake too many times in a row.
Well,
yeah. And do you think that gets, you know, 100 years from now, people are going to remember any, like, it's just weird. Is this, can you imagine if nuclear technology was, say, 500 years old, and there were still places on the Earth that were affected by radiation that you couldn't go?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, I think eventually if we're as bad with it as we are now, eventually there's going to have to be some actual biological evolution where we won't care because it won't actually hurt us that much. But who knows? Anyway, there you have it.
Did I live yesterday?
Mutable.